Thank you, and bright good morning to you.
Morning.
All right, now this is very dynamically practical. Stopping the wheel of life, reincarnation and karma. There's two things there, stopping the wheel of life and reincarnation and karma. They're two different things working together, and we're going to tell you about it this morning. The important thing is the first sentence, stopping the wheel of life. And the second is reincarnation and karma. So we start off with that, because unless you understand that, you cannot stop the wheel of life. Any case, what's the wheel of life? It's a very beautiful ancient Sanskrit expression, Dharma Chakra, the wheel of life. Sanskrit is such an amazing language. It's the most spiritual language that ever existed on this planet or ever will exist on the planet. There is nothing like it. They got about 20,000 spiritual terms or expressions, 20,000 words directly relating to spiritual truths or realities. All the languages combined won't have that many spiritual terms and expressions, you know, as in Sanskrit. It's just amazing the depths of that language in terms of conveying ultimate truths. Okay, first of all, what's the wheel of life and how it relates to reincarnation karma? This is a fundamental law which unfortunately is not taught in the educational system. Unfortunately, the real important knowledge, as I mentioned many, many times before, why I'm a little bit not happy with the educational system of all the countries of the world, is they're not teaching that which really people should know. You know, they get sidetracked in all kinds of other details, but not what actually every human soul on this planet should know. Reincarnation and karma is one of those fundamental truths which everybody should know from kindergarten. So, it means that at the moment we are here, because of a long, long series of lives, which we did many, many things. You know, the human soul has been in existence for eons and eons of time, limitless time. Creation began 4.5 billion years ago, all right, in this particular part of the relative structure of the universe, a local hangout, you know, where we are hanging out, okay? Now, this local hangout on this planet started about 4.5 billion years ago. So you as a soul have been on this scene of local hanging out for 4.5 billion years. And this is an important thing to understand, because then you say, okay, so what did I achieve? All right, you've been an embodiment, you know, first of all on the inner worlds, and then slowly coming down from the nirvanic dimension and then to the Buddhic world, which the Bible called paradise, from which you were chucked out because of the apple. You know, and then you went down to the heaven worlds, and then first of all, then finally down in physical incarnation. Your physical life cycle started about 4 million years ago, as recognizably some sort of a physical embodiment, okay? But any case, the whole story is that when you question yourself, you know, repeatedly you've been incarnating in various bodies, male and female. That's another thing, is that you ladies don't get annoyed with the male, because there's a common tendency nowadays for the females to blame everything on the male, you know. But actually, you have to remember that you were both male and female many, many lifetimes. So if you don't like the guys now, well, you blame yourself, because in a previous lifetime you were also a male. You did the same silly stuff and notice things that the males are doing now. You know, you've done exactly the same thing. So you have to kind of broaden a little bit your horizon and understand that the stupid stuff miles does you've done it before, many, many times, many lifetimes. We are incarnating into different bodies all the time. Anyhow, so the basic idea is that we've been incarnating for a very, very long time. First of all, before we can come back to the stopping of the wheel of life, we have to understand this process of incarnation, why, and how it refers to karma, and how it refers to the wheel of life, and how it refers to stopping the wheel of life. What was the original purpose why we started this journey? Your beginning was about, say, a few million years ago on the inner worlds. Now, what on earth was your problem, or why did you come down in the first place? From this beautiful state, first of all, is nirvana, which is absolute, indescribable bliss and total existence. Everything that you can imagine to the uttermost perfection, to the uttermost reality, is just fantastic. Then you went down one stage below, which is, as I said, the Bible called the paradise state, where you learn to know about good and evil. In other words, that things are not so good and things are also good. What is sort of totally pleasant and things which are not pleasant, you know, or not totally 100% in harmony with things, okay? And then in any case, that's when you ate the apple, and then it was obviously a bad apple. It had a worm in it, okay? We won't tell you which company did it in New Zealand, which farm it came from, okay? Now, then here is the big problem, is that once you come out of the Buddhic dimension, which is we call the paradise condition, it is the world of unity, it's the world of oneness, it's the world of absolute oneness, where you could understand the life structure as one, you as part of an infinite ocean of reality, part of an infinite ocean of beautiful light, a part of an infinite ocean of harmony, truth and goodness and all that. So you're part of that. But then you came down into the causal worlds, where you stopped being part of that unity and you became separated, and you had your own sense of I am-ness. You know, a sense of ego, a sense of higher ego. And then you started coming down to still lower worlds until about 4 million years ago. So the exact day doesn't matter which day the disaster happened, but you started to incarnate in physical bodies. We don't want to go into the whole theory of evolution and all that. It's not important. Just the basic fact that you started incarnating in physical bodies and you lost it all. Ever since then, you are wandering in darkness, right? Because once we start incarnating in the physical world, we lose all the sense of inner touch. We don't even see the inner beauties of even the astral world, let alone the causal worlds. We just have no sense of, we lost the inner touch. So then when you sort of think like that, then you say, well, why did I want to come here in the first place? You know, what is the motive? What is your primary motive to come into incarnation here in the first place? What was your primary motive? You need to ask yourself, it's like this, suppose you lived in a very rich marae, you know, everything is made of solid gold and marble and greenstone, you know, everything, the whole structure is made of gold and marble and greenstone and all the most beautiful kauri wood and everything else. It's a very sort of a rich marae, and that's where you brought up. And suddenly you go to a very poor marae when there is nothing, you see. And then you sort of scratch your head and you wake up and say, why the hell did I do that for? You know, coming from a state of richness when everything is and everything is amazing, total perfection. So why did I come down to a place which is a hellhole in comparison? Okay, so this is the question you have to ask yourself. Why did you come here? All right, well, we can give you an answer. I'm just giving you kind of images. I think sometimes images are perhaps the best to stimulate your inner consciousness, to stimulate your inner mind to try to understand truth. Okay, I give you a story about the life of Lord Buddha. You may have heard the story of the Buddha. He was a prince in India. His father was running a kingdom in India in those days. 2,500 years ago, the Buddha was a prince, and he was supposed to be the future king, you know. He lived in a real golden palace and everything was fantastic. They had armies and servants and, you know, everything that a human being can desire, it was there for him. He was brought up in that. And he was in his 20s. He was married. He had a wife. He had children. You know, everything ideal that a human mind can imagine, he had it. There's nothing that he wanted, you know. And yet, there's only one problem, that he never left the palace. His father never allowed him to go outside of the palace. He didn't know what the outside world was. And then, increasingly, he was beginning to be restless. Although he had everything, but he wanted something else. He wanted to know what is outside of the gate, what is outside of the palace. And you know, first time in his life, in his 20s, he sneaked out one night. He bribed some guards. He gave them some money or some gift. Says, let me go outside and I have a look around. And then he really had a shock. He saw that outside of this amazing palace, there was poverty, there was misery, there was old age, there was dying, there was sickness, there was everything terrible wrong. And then he went back, and that initial vision of what was outside as compared to what was inside completely blew his mind. And then he said to his father, I said, look, that's it. I'm no longer a prince. I don't want the kingdom. I'm going outside and look for the truth. I want to find what the real truth about life is. And then he left his wife and children behind and everything else. And he became a sannyasi, a sadhu, if you like. Renounced the world and he started his spiritual path and meditation. And then, you know, attained Buddhahood or enlightenment or understanding what life is about. All right, this is just a rough example. Now, it is the case with you as a soul. You wanted to find out, you lived in these conditions, but you wanted to find out the things below. What are in other realms, in other kingdoms, in other places, you know, because the universe is a multidimensional structure, like many mentions. In the Bible, it is said many mentions, many rooms, many realms, many planes of being. But something inside you, the spirit inside you, wanted to know, is there something else? What is outside? What is outside of this compound? Because even Nirvana is just a compound, you know. Every realm is just a kind of a statutory place where you stay, but you don't know what the other places are like. So there is a kind of innate curiosity, the curiosity of the spirit within you, which wanted to know what other conditions are like, what it is to be there, what it is to experience it. So then you started descending in conspiracy with a few billion others. You know, you weren't the only ones. There were 6.5 billion people, souls, the spirits who decided to wander off in beautiful nirvanic condition, the kingdom of God, and try their luck, try their fortune. You remember the old fairy tales? The guy, I don't know whether you read European fairy tales, is so beautiful in spiritual meaning. You know, these people born in a very poor peasant, you know, working class situation, and the boys decided to go off to the world to try their luck. You know, it's so typical in fairy tales that somebody is born in a particular place, in a particular condition, and he goes and gets his stick, and he's got his food ration, you know, like a bread and cheese or something like that, and away he goes and tries his luck in the world. Nowadays, of course, you get a jet plane and go to Europe or something like that, you know, or emigrate to Australia or Great Britain or anywhere else. Anyhow, in those days, they didn't have all these gadgets. They had to travel on foot and try their luck in the world. So you decided to come down to try your luck in the world, in the big world, in the big cosmos. Okay, maybe originally that was a good idea. I don't think now that it was, but you thought at that time. Well, actually, you didn't even think it. It was just an impulse, okay? There are actually a few hundred millions of spirits in Nirvana or in the kingdom of God, in the world of light, who refuse to do that, and they're still there. We call them the virgin spirits, or those who are never mixed up with matter or any condition below. They are. When you enter Nirvana, it's full of entities who never left that realm. They don't know what it is like to be outside of this amazing, blissful palace they're living in, okay? You can meet them when you get back there tomorrow or whenever. Anyhow, so you decided to come down here. But then the problem started. The further you came down, into the lower manifestation, the lower worlds of creation, the more you forgot why you came down in the first place and what the other place was like. You know, you got so entangled in the stuff which is happening in those worlds. Isn't that so that suppose you were born in Waikato and... This is a very bad example. Suppose you were born in Waikato 300 years ago and you decide to conquer China. And you go to China and lead a revolutionary army in China and conquer a kingdom, you know. And in the battle and in the heat of conquering the kingdom, you've completely forgotten where you were born and why you went there in the first place. It's something like that, okay. So you came down and get involved in all kinds of activities and doings and repercussions we call karma. Tit for tat, this for that, okay? You got involved in all kinds of things, and then for the rest of your existence, you're continually dealing with tit for tat, eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, action and reaction, okay? Completely forgetting why on earth you are here in the first place. So, for the last few thousands of lifetimes, you've completely forgotten why you're here and what are you doing on this planet anyhow, because you're so busy working out the results of your previous actions and creating new causes now, which will result in other action, which you have to remedy again. You come back again and come back again and come back again till the end of time, until you learn the big secret. And this is really the sad story of every human being on this planet. Everybody you met in your family, in your family, in the tribe, in the nation, in the world, is suffering from the same problem. They are simply reacting every lifetime to all the previous actions they did, trying to balance it up, and then they're creating new ones, which will decide for the future life, doing the same thing endlessly. Life after life, you're just dealing with karma, action and reaction, cause and effect. You know, all the people you have met in the past, all the people you're meeting now, will create a situation when you meet them again in the future, and so on and so on. In other words, your whole life energy is spent in rectifying all the deeds you did. By deeds, we mean physical action, mental action, and emotion. Most people don't understand that action is not only physical, it's also mental, it's also emotional. They all have its results. Thoughts have their results, feelings have their result, physical action have their result, and they're all karma, and you have to balance them all out. So you're spending all your time when you are born working out your karma, and you're so busy in that, then you die again. And then you're born again and you start working out your karma again. And that goes on and on and on endlessly until somebody comes along and say, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? Do you understand what are you doing? This is where the spiritual teachers come into the scene. Before you meet a spiritual teacher, you're just doing like that, balancing out your karmas with your family, balancing out karmas with the people you have met in previous lifetimes, balancing out karma with groups, you know, with the tribe. Maybe in some people, hundreds of people, you know, you have to deal with in your lifetime. And it's simply because you're just simply working out the action and interaction previously, what you did, what they did, and how you related or didn't relate. It just keeps going on backwards and forwards. You try to work it out all your lifetime. Same with a family situation, marriage situation, children's situation, all kinds of situations, friendships, loyalty to all kinds of people. You keep working it out backwards and forwards all the time. Until somebody says, hey, stop, look, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And how long are you going to do it? Saying that you've been doing it since in physical incarnation, about 4 million or roughly, you know, given one day or two here and there, it doesn't matter, you know. When you talk about millions of years, what's here one day or there is meaningless. Anyhow, for a long time you've been doing this. Okay, so we're coming back again, rewinding the tape a little bit backward again. Suppose you have been doing this, you know, meeting your friends. By the way, all the people you meet in this lifetime, you have met before. We've been together before, believe it or not. Everybody whom you meet in this lifetime and have a significance to you in your life, you have met before. In Greece or in Egypt or Rome in China or India, someplace in the great planetary or in South America, Latin America, but nowadays, you remember, those are just names. The planet is one. It's just one sphere. And you can be born in different parts of the planet, whichever they are called nowadays, it doesn't matter. It may have been China in those days, may have been in what we call Peru. So you may have been born in different parts of the planet in previous lifetimes. But as you are born in each lifetime, you're connecting to people. And then you start what we call action and reaction or karma. And again, sometimes you meet some people in this lifetime, you have to work out your karma with them, action and reaction. Something you may have totally... another thing you have to understand here is that life is actually much longer than just a few hundred years. Like, you know, in a lot of countries they worship the ancestors, like, you know, in the Maori tradition, in the Japanese tradition, in the Tibetan tradition, in the Chinese tradition, in the Hindu tradition, practically in all tradition, they worship the ancestors, which presumes that from all eternity, those people are born in the same race or tribe, which is not true. You know, like you think that if you can track back your ancestors to 400 or 500 years, that's okay. But you can't trace back your ancestors to 1,000 years, 2,000 years, 10,000 years. If you could do that, it's assumed that a Maori always was a Maori since the beginning of time. A Chinese person was always a Chinese person since the beginning of time. A Russian person was always a Russian person since the beginning of time. This is not so. You can trace the association to a certain century because the souls do actually revolve around the planet. perhaps, you know, the Maori structure may go up to 1,000 or 2,000 years, if you can trace it back at all. But if you go further back, you might find that some of those souls were incarnated in Atlantis, and you were with them in Atlantis or something like that. In other words, it's not an inflexible structure that a Jew is always a Jew since the beginning of time, and the Maori is always a Maori since the beginning of time, and the Chinaman is always a Chinaman since the beginning of time. This is not so. We're talking about millions of years of evolution here, not just a few centuries. You know, for a few centuries, you can have a cohesion. It says, yes, China was in existence for 6,000 years. India did exist as a civilization for 6,000 years. You know, you can trace the Maori back 3,000 or 4,000 years or whatever. Okay, that's fine, but we're talking about millions of years. Now, during those millions of years, you've been born in many countries, in many races, many places, and created links, created, you know, relatives. And that's why, say, suppose you are a Maori now, but you go back to Hungary, and suddenly you find that you kind of feel at home being in Hungary. A lot of the Maoris I know, they said they feel natural being in Hungary. Why? Because some long time ago they've incarnated as Hungarians, a long time ago. You know, and same thing, you may travel to Latin America, you can go to Machu Picchu or Cusco, someplace like that, and you feel that you are at home, you understand the place. It is because some long time ago you were lived there and you were that kind of a people there, okay? So the soul circulates around the whole planet. This has to be understood. But what is important to understand is that when you are here, you are driven from your past karmas into this lifetime to work out your past. And it will go endless until you learn to stop the wheel of life. So the wheel of life is simply that you are born in the physical body, you do a lot of things, you act and react on people, people act and react on you, make a link with them, good, bad or indifferent, then you die, you have a pause, a rest in the inner worlds, and you come reincarnation again. And this play of action reaction starts all over again and all over again. And unless something happens, it will never stop. Okay, suppose if you are a school teacher, and you have a naughty class. There's always one or two naughty kids in any class, sometimes more than one or two naughty kids. If you have a lot of naughty kids in a class and you just let it be, it will not stop. You know, there's no way the naughty kids will wake up and say, oh, we are being naughty, let us be kind to the teacher, you know, we be goody-goodies. They just keep to be naughty. So what you have to do, if the teacher can't cope with the kids, then you have the school principal, somebody comes in, hey, you guys, stop it, otherwise you will be out, you know, out of the school or some punishment, something like that. So if you don't interfere with that naughty kid situation, they remain naughty. This is like, again, another bad example of life itself. If you don't interfere with the whole process, it just remains so. If you just allow your life to be as it is, good, bad or indifferent, we remember we're not targeting one quality, the totality of life, your whole life, which has got good in it, it's got bad in it, it was happiness in it, it was sadness in it, you know, just the total life experience. If you don't do something with it, it remains. You are going through a cycle now. You are going to die, going to the inner world, have a little holiday, catch up with yourself, and then you come down again, do the same thing. And unless you do something about it, it will just carry on. And that's why we have been in this incarnation thousands of lifetimes, and we just carry on as everything is. Until now. You wouldn't be here otherwise. Okay, so what happened between the consciousness where you couldn't care, you just lived your life and died without any worry about anything? Or why you in this lifetime begin to think, hey, what am I doing? Is there something more to life than this, what I'm doing? This process may have been only started this lifetime, but maybe 10 lifetimes ago, 5 lifetimes ago, 8 lifetimes ago, doesn't matter. There comes in your long cycle of existence a point where you stop, your soul just stops. It says, wow, what the hell am I doing? I've been married to this guy 5 times and I'm still arguing. I had this kid 10 times and he still fights me. I had this friend 14 times and he still betrays me, and so on and so on. You know, after a while, your soul on the causal world, you know, the soul can look back, look back long distance, hundreds of thousands of years, and he sees the same people popping up in your life, you know. Talking about on the soul, I mean, God, what's this guy doing all the time, you know? So there comes a point in your development when the soul is begin to be aware of what we call a continuum. You know, many, many lifetimes, like a sense of eternity and sees actions. This lifetime, you did this, somebody did this to you, you did that to that person. And, you know, there's an interplay. As I say, good, bad, or indifferent. It doesn't matter the quality itself. It's just that there's this interplay going on. And then suddenly you so say, what am I doing? What those guys are doing? What we are doing? What's this point of doing the same old stuff over and over again? Now, it's at that point where there's a major change happening inside you. Then the soul, when you are incarnated again, in this particular incarnation, whether it's this lifetime or several lifetimes before, it doesn't matter. At that time, your soul begins to think and says, okay, how can I stop the wheel of life from revolving exactly as it is? What's a wheel? The wheel of life, of course, Dharma Chakra in Sanskrit in those days, 2,500 years ago, 3,000 years ago in India, where this expression comes from, naturally they had chariots and carts and they had wheels, you know. They didn't have turbo engines like nowadays and all these fancy things nowadays. They had wheels, real wheels. The horses or the elephants or something drew that cart along real wheels. So the wheel of life. Okay, it makes sense. In those days, it made the perfect sense. A wheel which keeps going round and round and round. You know, unstoppable. But it's the same wheel which just keeps going round and round and round. It doesn't change into something else. You just think of a wheel. You can just think of your racing car, your Ferrari. It's got wheels in it. And when you look at the wheels, they just keep going round and round and round. They're not going to become anything else. They're just wheels going round and round and round. So, look at carefully this image of the wheel. Your life is like that. If nothing is done, if you don't do anything about it, it just keeps going round and round and round and round, which means you are born into incarnation and you die and go back to the astral world. If you're lucky, you go to the mental world, the heaven world, and then you come down again, and this wheel keeps going on and on and on until you decide to stop it, to do something with it. And this is that great moment when your whole life changes. And, you know, as I said, it may have started already 10 lifetimes ago. You may have started that 8 lifetimes ago. It doesn't matter. And that starting point, whether it was this lifetime or previous lifetimes, brought you here, brought you to these teachings, brought you to seek out, okay, what am I doing? Of course, when you first start this, you don't think it that way. You just have a desire to learn about something, you know. You don't say, well, I want to free myself from the wheel of life, because you never even heard of the wheel of life, probably. But there is some kind of an inner desire to say, you know, I want to know about something, a deeper knowledge, you know, not about the stalk of the flower and the trees, what they are called, some other kind of knowledge, which makes more sense, okay? So then you start looking for teachers or teachings or books or something which you think might give you answers to those other kinds of knowledge. So you could say that this is the beginning of your big trip backwards, big trip returning home. It's a kind of a far off memory that there's something else. You know, it's not very often when people start this, they don't consciously think of heaven and nirvana or going back to some ecstatic condition. They don't think of it like that. It's just like a search for knowledge. They want to know more than what their parents could tell them, or education could tell them, or their religious authorities could tell them, or somebody could tell them. They just want to know more and more and more all the time. Okay, when that happens, you are on the way of stopping the wheel of life. You haven't stopped it yet by any means, but the beginning process started. You begin to observe how the wheel works. That was really so funny. I don't know, there was some of these funny carry-on movies. Have you seen all those carry-on movies long time ago? These British funny carry-on movies. And there was one, I forgot now what was the name of it, but it's a funny one when the Romans arrived to Britain, and the British were portrayed as cavemen with big long beard and animal skins on them, and the Romans already arrived with chariots and horses and, you know, something like that. You know, well, in those days, the Romans were one of the most advanced civilizations. And this was a really funny one, and in one of these shows a village, an old British village, trying to make a wheel. And this guy had a square like that, you know, a wood like that, wood like that, wood like that. And he had two of these, and he wanted to have a horse to push that along, you know. And of course, you imagine a square wheel, well, he just goes whoop, whoop, like that. And then along comes the Roman guys with his chariot, you know, furiously driving very fast, you know. And, you know, that's an example of a wheel. In the beginning, you begin to observe the wheel, because this is just a funny movie, but it has a truth in it, because this guy, who was making the square wheel, realized that there's a better way of making the wheel, the way the Romans had it, which was round. And then what he did, it was the funny thing, he picked up the square wheel and made it into a window. He put it in his cave, and that was his window, you see? Okay. Anyhow, this is a funny story, but it's got a certain significance to it. When we are on the beginning of the end, the stopping the wheel of life, we begin to look at the wheel itself. Is it a square or a round? And how does it function? And why does it function like that? First, you might think that it is a square because it doesn't make any sense to you at all. You know, first of all, your life just won't make any sense to you at all. You may meet somebody whom you never done any harm in this lifetime, and he abuses you, he attacks you, he does naughty things to you or nice things to you, and you just can't understand it. Why the hell is he doing that to you? You haven't done any harm to the guy, you know. In other words, you're still working on the square wheel. You can't understand why something happens as it happens. So in the beginning, we look upon the wheel as something like a square where it doesn't make any logical sense. It doesn't seem to work. But as our spiritual understanding grows, as you begin to understand, things will begin to make sense. You know that, well, maybe I don't see the reason now, but maybe there was a reason back in the past. If you understand that your life is a continuum for many, many lifetimes, you know, you might not see something happening now, why it happens, but, you know, if you can track it back, say, 10 lifetimes ago, 100 lifetimes ago, you see what the cause was. You know, for instance, you go to Rome now and you are attracted to the amazing architecture there, you know, some beautiful architecture, and when you see how the original Rome was built, it was a beautiful palace and then beautiful buildings, you know, in the original color, and you say, wow, this is amazing. When you go to Rome, you can get these colored picture books or with the original colors of those buildings, majestic, beautiful, impressive shapes and colors, you know, and you say, wow, isn't that amazing? And why are you responding to that? Because you were living in Rome in those times when it was built. It triggers a memory inside you. Same is when you go to, you know, Latin America or Machu Picchu, some place like that, you suddenly feel a response with it. Well, because you lived there some time ago. Not maybe your last lifetime, maybe 10 lifetimes ago, even before. It doesn't matter, but you lived there. So you remember something of it. Okay, so in the beginning, when you are on this journey, things don't seem to make sense. Sometimes they make a little bit of sense, sometimes they don't make a sense. Okay, but it's good to know that it always makes a sense later on when you understand completely how it works. Okay, so now, we're coming back to the idea from reincarnation karma that if you don't do anything about anything like most people don't, it will just continue like that. Okay, take an example. If you have a bad relationship, very often people, you know, argue and fight or something like that, and they don't do anything about it. They just keep arguing and they're fighting until they die. Now, suppose you had a relationship like that in a previous lifetime. You are born again in this lifetime and you meet the same person and you marry again, or in some sort of a relationship, some family relationship. It doesn't have to be always marriage. It could be father, it could be grandfather, it could be uncle, it could be just any member of the family, father, for instance. And again, you have the same problem with them, you're fighting and everything else. And again, if it's nothing done about it, it will stay. And next lifetime, again, the same situation comes back. But maybe that person will be another kind of relative or something. It doesn't matter how. It just comes back. So, unless you want to change a situation, it will continue on. That's the law of karma. And this is what is important when you are here. Like, for instance, in New Zealand, you can change the situation in New Zealand if you want to. If you don't want to, it will continue on. Like this law is applicable everywhere and all of the time. There is a situation. Unless that situation, some intelligent will wants to change it, it will continue on. This is the law of karma. That's the wheel of life going round and round and round and round because it cannot go anywhere else. So, coming back to now, to your whole lifetime, as your total life picture, If you just want to be in the same condition of stress or any kind of situation as you are in, you know, the normal kind of happiness and unhappiness, the problems, the stresses or whatever, and if there is nothing done about it, it will just continue exactly like that. It's like a bad marriage or a bad relationship. If it's nothing done about it, it just stays like that. So what you do nowadays, you interfere. You say, okay, this is not working, we have to separate or go away or something like that because you just can't make it, then immediately that acts as a break. Or sometimes you bring another person, a counselor, or somebody who will explain what the problems are according to the understanding, and that may help or may not help. But the ultimate solution is always you look at your own life and understand it. And from that understanding, you can change it. You cannot change a situation unless you understand it. Okay, so when we look at our whole life, what is motivating you to come here? Well, as I said, this motivation may have started already several lifetimes ago. Maybe in China, maybe in India. You know, we've been together in India 7 times. We've been in China several times. We've been in Latin America several times. Okay, so maybe it started awakening inside you sometime in India. Who knows? It doesn't matter when. But what it is that you suddenly realize that everything that we can experience here is repetitive. It's like a wheel just going on. And therefore, it's no longer enough for you. You know, in the beginning, as I said, may have been good because in the beginning you have learned something from it. It expanded your understanding. In the beginning, it was great. It stretched yourself, made you greater in comprehending a larger picture of life. But now it's becoming a nuisance. You know, all these things in all the lower worlds, including this physical plane, all these strange environments, the animals, the humans and everything else may have been very exciting, you know, especially dealing with problems and dealing with situation. It sort of gets you, what's it called, that gland going?
Adrenaline.
In the beginning, chasing the possums was an adrenaline, you know. But nowadays, it's not so much of an adrenaline. There's 40 million of them, you see. So it's not really interesting, okay? So anyhow, so in the beginning, all these things in the physical world was an adrenaline to the soul. It was exciting. Oh, I had to deal with this problem and that problem. It's great, you know. It's sort of making you grow. But after a while, when they keep coming back, those problems endlessly, it's becoming a nuisance. It ceases to be exciting. You say, oh, not again. I have to meet those guys again. And then you begin to question, well, why am I in the first place? Okay. Now, once that question arises, it's not like a question like that. It's just some impression inside you. Then you say, okay, what am I going to do? Trying to learn the meaning of all these things, the meaning of life. And then you find that as you learn about the meaning of life, then you are able to stop the wheel of life from turning. You're going to go onto another wheel. You're going to a fast track. You're going to a jet plane instead of just one of those old-fashioned carts, you know. It's much easier. You're going to be flying in the first class, you know, on the jet. Next time when you go to Europe, go in the first class, you know. Okay, what it is that with knowledge and understanding, you can first see the pattern of your life. And then you realize that this is not necessary to live that way at all. You can live a better life. And then the third thing is that you can actually think of how to live that better life and how to actually get yourself with all this complex situation for the benefit of all these people, strange as it may seem. When you are on the spiritual path, it's not a selfish thing. It's not only for you, but really how to structure the life of humanity itself to make it better for everybody, how to make it better for the whole community, how to make it better for the whole world, because you know that everybody is suffering like you do. Everybody has the same problems like you do. If you think you have problems, you go to China, you meet a family there, they complain about the same situation. The teenagers are misbehaving, there's not enough money to pay the bills, there's not enough electricity, something, all the same thing. You go to Russia, you go to Afghanistan, you go to Pakistan, you go to India, or anywhere, people the same. They have problems of job, problems of family, problems of growing up, problems of sickness, problems of dying. Everybody is always the same. Your situation is not unique at all. It's just exactly the same as all the hundreds of millions of people. So once you are on this path, you realize, hey, this is universal problem. So if I can solve my problem, I can help many, many other people to solve their problems because the solution is identical. You know, it's like when you do mathematics, if you know how to solve a mathematical problem, you know that everybody can solve that problem exactly the same way. You just show them how to do it. It's simple as that. So that's where you come in. You discover the meaning of life, and you discover that there's a way out of it. Not way out of life itself, but the way life is being structured or organized around you, by you and the others. You can make it better, infinitely better, 1,000 times better. You're working on it, and then you will be able to make it better for yourself and for the others. Anybody who comes in touch with you in your lifetime. And then you understand the stopping of the wheel of life. All right? Anyhow, that's the instruction I would like to tell you this morning. You learn about yourself, you learn about the world, you learn about the meaning of life. See the wheel of life in a larger way, not a square wheel, but a round wheel. And then to be free of the wheel altogether. Now, I want to give you a meditation which relates to that, but again, it's going to be a tough one, because it's an easy one. Because it's an easy one, it's a tough one, you know. It's easier to do a movement of over 60 movements than one single meditation. This is the way to stop the wheel of life. When the movements of the mind come to an end, there is the timeless. As I said, it's very, very simple, but excruciatingly difficult. When you look at a wheel, you know, these horse carts and chariots, there was always the wheel with the spokes, and there was a circle inside it, which was empty. And in that emptiness, you had the axle, and the wheel was going round and round. But that axle was always there. The wheel went round and round and round it, but the axle was the stable bit. Now, that stable bit is the timeless. In other words, you are caught up in the wheel of life because of your mind. When the movements of the mind come to an end, there is the timeless, the eternal, the absolute, the original condition from where you come. So while the mind is in motion, in movement, you are involved in karma, cause and effect. You are involved in the whole going around of the wheel. Now, as soon as you stop the mind, still, no motion, then appears the timeless, the eternal, the hub of the wheel, the central circle of the wheel, the primary original within which all things take place. The hub of the wheel, just think of the hub, and the wheel just goes round and round that hub. But the hub itself is the timeless. That doesn't change, it just stays there. And round it simply goes the wheel. Now, putting that image, this is a symbol of the wheel, into your own self, the karma is caused by your endless churning of the mind. Your mind goes on about this and that, makes links with other people, has actions and reactions, and that goes on and on and on. Action, reaction, and the mind is causing it, the mind is dealing with it. The mind is actually the one which gets the wheel all the time going. Now, once the mind stops, when the thinking pattern stops, when the thought-producing pattern stops, when the ideation pattern stops, when you have no longer ideas or thoughts about anything, there's this incredible stillness, incredible calmness, incredible silence, then there's the timeless. In other words, you got off the wheel. You're no longer going along the wheel, you are in the hub, in the center of the wheel. This wheel is just a symbol, okay? So, if you want to go off the wheel of life, then you have to become still, you have to become silent, and you literally are off the wheel of life. Once that inner stillness arises, the silence arises, then you notice that karma no longer touch you. So, if you manage to do it once, I give you an example, which might help you, I don't know, but you may think of examples. Once, quite a few years ago, I had to pick up somebody at the airport. And that somebody had a very bad time, some other place, and came in a very sort of disturbed state of mind. You know, when you had a bad time somewhere, your emotions are all upset and you're all worked up. So this poor person came and got off the airplane totally all worked up and all upset. And it also affected me. And I realized that instantaneously how the effect came, but I didn't do anything about it, you know, because it's not really polite. Somebody just comes to you from a big drama and say, hey, you know, you are affecting me like that, go away. You know, it's not the sort of thing you do. So I didn't do anything. I just let it be, you know, all that negative energy and effect. Then I went home and then I sat down and just allowed that energy of stress and tension and a kind of half depression to come into my mind again and just allowed it to settle. And after a while, takes about half an hour, it settles, and then it stops. And that whole impression just simply vanished. it just fizzled out. So the mind became still and there was the timeless. It was literally like a transcendental experience. It was the timeless. There was nothing more to be done. Now, at that moment, I resolved the karma which that person handed over to me. Because when somebody gives you a bad trip, it is becoming your karma then. You have to work it out. You know, if somebody is annoyed with you or depressed or something and they load it onto you, it is becoming your karma, unfortunately. That's the law of life. So you have to work it out. So what I did, you know, I just sat like that and let it all sizzle and go inside until it all started dying down, and then there was absolute stillness. It was nothing. And when I got up in that meditation, I was bright and clear as if that negativity never came to me. And then I approached that person. I went to that person completely, you know, in that clear space, timeless space. And I started talking to him, oh, how was it and, you know, what was the problem and why did you get into that? But I was no longer affected by that energy level. I wasn't like dispassionate. It was more like above it. You're just talking to that person. And in that new way of reacting to that person got cleared. That person realized that it was all just a happening of time, just some sort of a karma which they had to go through. It was a karma they had to go through. And then that dissolved. Okay, just as, I mean, I'm sure you can find millions of examples like that, but the truth is that when the mental activity, busyness stops, whatever reason of the activity was, there comes the timeless and you're moving off the wheel of life, quite literally at that time. Now, the thing is that if you keep repeating it, this was just say one occasion, but what if you learn this art of repeating it and getting off the wheel of life at will, whenever you want to? Going back to this tremendous free space inside yourself, tremendous freedom, not affected by anything around you. What if you keep repeating it and keep repeating it in meditation? Well, then it becomes like a habit. You can still communicate with people, you can still deal with them, but they're not going to affect you. And if they do very quickly, as I said, you dissolve the effect. You're dissolving their karma for them. They handed over their karma to you, and you're going to deal with it. You neutralize it within yourself, and then you can approach that person in that neutral state, in the timeless condition. And then you help them to solve their karma. But the main thing is, first of all, understanding yourself. If you can do this, and say repeatedly, then increasingly there comes an ability when you can deal with life. You're still in the circle of life, but at the same time you are in the hub of the wheel, in the timeless condition. You're still doing your thing, what you need to do. You're still dealing with people, what you have to do. Everything is remaining the same, except your reaction to it not the same. Your reaction is way above. You know, it's like when you are on a mountain top and you're looking down and see and all the actions on the valley, all the things which are happening. You see it, you perceive it, you register it, but you're not involved. You are way up here, looking down, okay? So then you are off the wheel of life. You are free, liberated in this lifetime. You are literally a freed person. Okay, anyhow, just to give you an idea. So what we're going to do for the next few minutes is try to just sit still and allow the mind to settle. You know, all the ramblings of the mind, thinking about the wheel and everything else, just let it stop without forcing it, you know. It's not that you're sitting like that. I have to have my mind stopping still. Stop still your mind. It doesn't going to work like that. Just simply allow it to settle down by itself. And this is the most easiest way of meditation and the most difficult for most people, that you don't do it. You allow it only to happen. That meditation is very difficult for people because you always want to do it. So in this meditation, just sitting still and let the mind ramble on and everything, just let it happen and you don't interfere. And simply allow quietly dissipate of its own. You know, like when you have a lake or an ocean and the big wind is blowing, then the waves are going all the time. Now stop the wind. What happens? After a while, the waves slow down and then stop. And the lake becomes still. Your mind is going on like mad all the time, thinking about all kinds of things. Okay, let it think and just sit there and wait and just allow it to simmer down. And when it stops by itself, then you feel that you transcended the mind and transcended the wheel of life, transcended time. And then you begin to sense timelessness, a spacelessness, a sense of tremendous expansion, a tremendous being and so on and so on, all by itself. Okay, well, let's just try to do that for the next 10 minutes or so. Okay, thank you, Kamal. Try to practice that, especially after when you've been upset. Those of you who are working in psychology or counseling or healing or social work, very often you encounter people in very bad states of mind or emotions and you get affected by them. They are transferring their karma to you, but they don't know it, of course, but they do. So what you do is do this technique. Just sit down, not at the time when you're dealing with them, but afterwards. You just sit down and allow the whole thing come back to you and receive the thing which as it was, and then just sit still and allow, it's like turbulent water. If you let it be, it will settle down. You know, when you have a pot of water with sand in it or dirt in it and you stir it all up, okay, while you're stirring it up, the sand and dirt will go around, but then you stop stirring it and it will slowly settles down, and the sand settles down the bottom and the water comes clear on the top. So it's like that. You know, you receive all negative stuff from people and of course it churns up your aura and your own astral body and everything else. So you sit down and let it be and don't take any notice of it, and after a while it settles down and the dust or the negative energy which they implanted into you settles down, and then you see your way clearly. Now you have to remain in that clarity when you're dealing with them next time. And if you can do that, then you're actually helping them to get rid of their bad karma. If you go back in the same state as you received it, well, then you're not really helping them. It's just karma against karma and so on. You know, that's how it works. Anyhow, this is one practical application, but the main thing is that it helps you to understand how to move off the wheel of life.